You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.
Today on our show, I'm talking with Daniel Turner. Daniel, thanks so much for being with me today.
Thanks for having me.
Daniel, tell me a little bit about what you're working on now, and where are you? Are you in New York now or somewhere else?
I'm actually at home in Clinton Hill in Brooklyn, around the corner from Pratt, where I work full-time.
Cool. So tell me what you're...
extended lunch break, yeah.
Nice. Well, I appreciate that. So tell me what you're working on now. What's happening in your studio?
Well, you know, I wear a lot of hats. As you may know, I run an art gallery, actually here, and I also am a practicing artist, and the summertime is sort of my best time to focus on my own personal work, because I'm so busy during the rest of the year with my job and running the gallery. And it seems like this summer I'm sort of strangely sort of revisiting areas of my work that I haven't really done in a few years. Everything seems to be coming back to sort of Jewish identity, which was not something that I felt the need to sort of label my work in until sort of more recently. All these sort of little worlds are colliding.
That's so interesting. So tell me more about that. We'll talk about the gallery too, but tell me about the little worlds that are colliding that make this body of work or that idea possible, because that's interesting to me.
Well, someone recommended that I check out this thing called Asylum Arts. And it's basically sort of an arts organization focusing on Jewish artists or artists that are making work that relates to Judaism in some way, either sort of explicitly or not. And I sort of applied to this artist retreat and just found out that I got into it. And it's just a few days in early December. You know, I never really, you know, identified or self-identified. I mean, I am a Jew, you know, so much of my work deals with the Holocaust and my father, who is a survivor, but it was not something that I felt the need to sort of explain to people that didn't know my work. I'm a Jewish artist. I would never say that. That doesn't sound very natural to me. But within the last month, it's something that I've been thinking about, sort of identifying in that way, and it sort of has a certain type of specificity that I like that applies to a large body of my work.
So let's talk a little bit more about that specificity that applies to a large body of your work, because that's my father was Jewish, seemed almost reluctantly, and so I'm also to some extent steeped in that tradition. Tell me a little bit more about what's happening there, what that means.
Well, you know, I guess when you think, or at least when I hear the word, the idea of Jewish art, I think for some people they sort of they might think of Judaica, and I understand that sort of misunderstanding, but I don't really think of myself making Jewish art as much as I make work that pertains to history. And I think that there are sort of culturally Jewish subjects within my work. But I don't like the idea of essentially tying religion to my work. And I think that in the past it was something that I find sort of uncomfortable. It's a little bit scary. It's off-putting. It doesn't sound very appetizing. But I also think that now, especially as it pertains to the Holocaust, I think that there is a kind of relevance. My father is a 94-year-old Holocaust survivor, and he's not going to be around forever. And I'm always sort of trying to interest people in his story. And so, particularly towards the end of his life, you know, I think that I'm trying to get not only his work as an artist as much exposure as I can, but to also work with him, to collaborate, to make works together, and get other people interested in who he is as the sort of living, breathing survivor here in Brooklyn that, you know, still has an active mind, and is an incredible person.
So how does that, you know, I'd love to hear a little bit more about your father and what's happening there, but how does that make its way into your work now?
Well, I, for many years, I've been, you know, making sort of formal portraits of my father, and it's the work that I've been doing with him and also my mom has gotten a little bit stranger. It's gotten less from the kind of fine art photography to, in some time, sometimes it's more sort of performative videos that we do together. So it's a mixture of you know, long form videos and photography, and sometimes using found material like family photos or materials that my dad uses in his artwork. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, it does. And so, but your work in terms of, you know, Jewish identity and even the residency that you're having when you're showing this work, is it you feel it's taken a turn and partly because of what you're talking about with your father, you're identifying that way? Is that what the audience sees? That's what I'm kind of wondering, how the viewer picks up on what you're doing with your work and mm-hmm. and what you're expressing about your father.
Yeah, I mean, I think the key word is audience for me. You know, as a someone that is, you know, plays a very small role in the contemporary art world here in the city. You know, tying any sort of artwork to religion just seems a little bit taboo, something like that, in the same way that politics can as well. And that's, of course, until more recently. And I think as an artist myself, I have always been a little bit wary of, you know, thinking of my work in religious terms. However, it's also so important to be true to yourself, to be honest with your work. And I have felt that there is a little bit of an audience, if you will, for the work that I do about my father and about the Holocaust. And generally, I have thought that audience is an older generation, a less sort of less involved within the contemporary art world, a little more sort of Jewish organizations, community, that kind of thing, a different aspect of the world, and the type of audience that sort of is interested in my father as a Holocaust survivor, but may not be as informed about sort of contemporary art practices. And so I've always felt that I'm sort of dipping my feet into these two different worlds. And so right now this summer is about trying to figure out how I can orient my work towards, you know, how can I continue doing the work that I do on my father and the Holocaust and sort of embracing this religious aspect and applying that to the sort of the more kind of, you know, the contemporary art world that I'm also a part of.
And so that's clear. Do you have any idea how that will happen? Can you give an example of how that has manifested or happened, an image or one work or some event that kind of articulates what you're just saying in terms of an image or work of art?
No, and that's what's kind of exciting for me. I've been kind of meeting other artists. I've always sort of felt a little bit isolated about this stuff, that I don't really have someone else to talk to about it, to sort of bounce ideas off and you know, talk about our sort of the uncertainties, the things that make us uncomfortable. But more recently, I've been meeting and talking with these other artists. And it seems that there's quite a few of us out there, all wrestling with sort of family trauma and doing, you know, just doing a variety of things. And so I'm looking forward to really going on this retreat and really speaking at great length with others that might be able to sort of orient me towards a path or help me, you know, develop one of my own. So I don't really have any particular artwork that I can say. You know, it's more like my sort of a little bit of my strategy. You know, how will I, you know, to what audience can I put this work that I've been doing for many years?
And before we talk about your gallery, can you tell me a little bit about your father? I don't know what you want to talk about him, but
Yeah.
perhaps a little bit about his experience as
Yeah.
a survivor. Every survivor, of course, has a completely unique experience with what they've done. So yeah, I'd love to hear a little bit
Yeah.
about him.
Well, he was born in 1923, and he grew up in Prague, in this middle class family, sort of an intellectual family. And Prague was sort of a culturally rich city at that time. You know, he grew up with music in the house, you know, just sort of not. Yeah, reading groups and things like that. And he went to his first camp when he was 18, that concentration camp, and ended up at Terezin, or Theresienstadt, then went to Auschwitz and then to Dachau. His father and his younger brother were killed in the camps, and he was liberated on, let me think here, in April 1945 in Dachau by the American army. And after the war, he returned to Prague. He reconnected with actually his high school girlfriend, Stella, who was also a survivor. And they married, and they moved to Paris, and that's where he began sketching more and making his first artwork, hanging out with soldiers that were studying art in Paris under the GI Bill. And he immigrated to New York City in 1952, the day that Eisenhower was elected, and has been in New York since, and working as a painter. He had to take care of Stella for many years. She was extremely traumatized by the war, and essentially hospitalized constantly towards the end of her life. This was in the 70s. They were divorced in the 70s, and he met my mom in the early 80s. Actually, he was invited to speak to at a sort of, my mom is a child of survivors, and he was invited to speak to these, you know, children of survivors about trauma and things like that. And that's where he met her, and they fell in love and married soon after. And they adopted me in 1987. And yeah.
And so he's in terms of his reflections on it and how that helps you understand more or get more involved in Jewish culture and identity. Does he talk about it a lot? I mean, there's a lot of survivors who don't want to talk about it at all. I mean, it's such a traumatic thing to go through. You know, the memories of that time, I would think, are you know, as writers like Primo Levi talk about, just the memories themselves are hard to retrieve. They're complex, what it means to even remember them. Does he talk about it a lot to you? Is there stories that he tells you?
Yeah, he very much talks, and he sort of sees it as a duty of, you know, as a survivor. You know, when they were in the camps, they said, you know, if any of us survive, we need to tell what happened here. And so growing up, he was always, you know, being interviewed for, you know, oral testimonies and speaking to groups of people, to students, to congregations, everything you can imagine. And actually, some of my work addresses the sort of the spectacle of Holocaust survivors bearing witness.
How does the work do that? Yeah, go on.
Yeah, there's, you know, like, in a way he is, in a way he's an actor, or a prop that organizations need to use. And he's aware of it, and he's happy to be that prop. Here you have a living, breathing survivor. You know, he's got his prisoner number tattooed on his arm, and while he doesn't tell the gory details, he tells a compelling story. And I think that is a very important tool to utilize towards a younger audience, or just an audience that may not know so much about the Holocaust. But what I'm interested in is this sort of compassion fatigue. So thinking of the kind of ingredients that are necessary for a commemorative event, the candle lighting ceremony, the children choir, the images of Auschwitz with the tracks extending out to the horizon, the whole sepia-toned vibe of the event. I'm interested in addressing that and looking critically at it. And so, you know, one of the more recent video projects that I've been working on for the last couple of years is in 2015 the Dachau Memorial Site invited us to come to the camp for the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the camp. And, you know, the German government paid for us to go there, and we went, and it was sort of a huge meeting of survivors and their grandchildren and political speakers like Angela Merkel. And, you know, my dad says, you know, I'm like, you know, sometimes I'll be like, oh, you know, so-and-so is a survivor too. You should meet them, or you might want to talk to them. He says, what are we supposed to do, get together and talk about the good old days? You know, it's not like they enjoy, or it's not like he enjoys, you know, sitting down with another survivor and just sort of, you know, talking about the dates that they were in prison. And so that's what this event was like. And the footage that I captured addresses, you know, the politics, the bureaucracy, the media, the sort of ludicrousness of the spectacle itself, the symbols of nationalism like Israeli flags and thing, and also even the German police force that was there. In one memorable moment, before Angela Merkel's big speech, she actually made sort of a few remarks at the gas chambers. And it was such a mob scene because everybody wanted to go there and to see her in person to speak, that people were trying to get into the gas chamber, and the police were forcing people away. So it was this kind of ironic twist that I saw taking place in front of me. So, yeah.
And so that footage, how will you use that footage? How will that be integrated into your work?
Well, it's a good question. You know, I think that the work that I make on video, it should generally be projected. You know, it should be seen large. They're not really movies. They're kind of like home videos. I don't like it when things are, it depends on the content. It depends on the piece itself. But this type of work doesn't have as much of an impact when it's displayed on a screen in a gallery or something like that. It should just be larger. But I also see some of the footage. I think some of it can be sort of taken out and made into photographs. For example, at the memorial site, I took photographs of every wreath of flowers that was sort of, symbolically placed from, as many countries that were participating in this event. And I think that, so I think that the project can take on the form of not only a video, but also sort of a photo installation. And I think that I'm really going to figure all this stuff out over the summer.
That's really interesting and exciting. So part of it, which seems so interesting to me, is this also critical examination as a child of a survivor, but also, 2018, looking critically at media and everything, and how that whole event is orchestrated. And as you're saying, the flags flying, the police force, the politicians, there's so many other elements at work, which maybe that's what you meant earlier. It certainly sounds to me like all these worlds colliding, creating an opportunity to speak to that in a unique way as an artist and also as someone who's personally involved, right? So that's really fascinating. And before we go, and I'm so glad you shared that story, and so interested to see what comes out of that work. Tell me a little bit about 321 Gallery. This is your gallery that you founded and directed in Brooklyn, correct?
Yeah, 321 Gallery. So I live here in Brooklyn, in Clinton Hill, in a brownstone, still with my family. My mom and dad live upstairs. I live on the garden level. And in 2012, my buddy and I were sitting around and, sort of thinking, okay, well, we're both artists. Who do we show our work to? How do we get people to see our work? And he's like, well, you live here in this apartment. You've got a lot of space that you don't seem to use. Why don't we have an art show here? So we did. And I had never heard of apartment galleries or anything like that, which is, now, of course, I know that this is actually a lot more common, particularly in Chicago. Then in 2013, I was like, I want to do this again. So I happened to be introduced to a painter whose work I really admired. I said, hey, I did a show here once with my own work and my buddies, but, maybe it would be nice to have a show with your work. And he met me, and, we had a conversation, and we talked about the show, and the idea developed, and he said, I think we really need a sculptor for this show. And so he introduced me to, my now partner, the co-director, Tom Forkin. Since 2013, we've been working on shows together, and I think we just are finishing, wrapping up our 34th show. And we've participated in art fairs, Untitled in San Francisco, Material in Mexico City, and mostly NADA New York, the New Art Dealers Alliance. And that's been our biggest sort of supporter and gotten us the most exposure and generated some sales for us. And we've really learned it, on our own. And what's really great is watching other galleries start in the city that are kind of run by young artists like ourselves. And, there's no sense of competitiveness. We all have unique programs, and we all support each other, and we all recommend things to each other, either, art fairs to apply to or artists to check out. And it's turned into, like, a huge part of what I do. I wouldn't say it's a part of my practice, but it's like a job. It's a job that I love. It's a lot of work, and I'm really proud of what I've taught myself.
It's also a way of staying engaged with the art world on a different level, right? I mean, as an artist, you can seek shows and have shows and residencies, and it's about your work. But having a gallery, and especially the way this one came to be as an apartment gallery that was a collaboration initially in your home, it's also being part of a conversation, a community, isn't it? That wouldn't have been available in the same way before that.
Totally. Yeah. I mean, when back in 2012, we were sort of, we didn't know what to do. You don't just walk into a gallery in Chelsea or knock on the door and say, "Oh, I'm an artist. Here's my work." You know, that's you know, you just don't do that. So we I think in retrospect, we needed to create our own world, and we needed to create our own art world, our own community, and we did that. And yeah, you know, I come from a photography background. I went to Bard College, where I studied photography and did a little video towards the end of my time there. But I wasn't as aware about painting or sculpture. And my partner, Tom, who went to Pratt and studied sculpture at Pratt, he has just, you know, exposed me to so much that I didn't know. So it's fun. So my world really did open up as a result of you know, working with someone else that had challenging ideas. And, you know, we do bounce ideas off each other. You know, I tend to, you know, we just have totally different tastes, and that always results in our, you can't really pinpoint our programming. It's so diverse. We have performances. It's not medium specific at all. You know, sometimes, you know, we'll have a photography only show. Sometimes there'll be a performance. Sometimes it's a group show. It's wildly different, and generally we try to support the work of a multi-generational group of artists that you know, want to realize a project and realize that project in our space.
And how so the artists that you find, to ask this last question about the gallery 321, are these artists that are all by referral? Do you find them in other ways? Is it just between you and your partner and how you choose them, or how do artists come to you? Because like you're saying, in Chelsea, it's, you can't just go in and say, here's my art. But do people come to you and say that?
Yeah. I mean, it's a mixture. You know, we do have people that have never met us before and, you know, sort of send us their portfolios and things. And, you know, I understand the Chelsea Gallery thing that I was saying before. You know, we can't really respond to everybody in that way. The way, you know, Tom and I work differently in terms of sort of discovering artists. I like learning about the work first before knowing the artist personally, and then sort of discovering who they are as a result of my initial response to their work. Whereas I think Tom sort of finds artists that are closer to him, you know, within, you know, his friends. And then, you know, so we have this kind of inverse way of quote-unquote discovering work, and I like that. So, you know, it really depends. You know, there are times when we have accepted proposals, and there are times when, you know, I have, you know, seen something and then approached the artist after seeing the work, and sometimes it'll be a good friend of ours who we've done multiple studio visits with and are like, okay, I think that it's time for this work to be seen, and, you know, would you like to show it with 321?
And when you find artists, which is of course different than the way your partner is, and you're finding the artwork first, as I understand what you're saying, where do you see that artwork? Is that through nonprofit spaces, other galleries? Where are you seeing that, which may in some cases lead to your, you know, quote unquote discovering them and then meeting them in person? Where do you see that work initially?
One artist, which was one of my favorite shows, was Leah Lowenthal, and I saw her work at the Bard MFA group thesis show. And it wasn't until even a year later that I, you know, got her contact info and reached out for a studio visit. Another artist, Dan Boardman, I had been following his work online. He's a photographer. As sort of a nerdy photographer myself, I had been kind of following his work on blogs and interviews and things like that. And it wasn't until like 4 years later that I, you know, actually approached him, with the idea of doing a show with him. So, yeah, it also ranges. Yeah.
Daniel, it's great talking to you about all this, and there'll be links in here to the gallery and other things. Is there a show upcoming in the fall or anytime soon that you want to plug before I ask you the last question?
Yeah, we're doing a solo show. Hang on, I'm just waiting for this truck. We're doing a solo show with Laura Hunt, opening on September 14th. It's a Friday, and she doesn't have a title for the show yet, but so that's coming up, and we're just going to take a break during August and open that up, and we're also going to be participating at an art fair in Barcelona called Swab, and we're bringing Evan Whale and Will Stewart.
What are you reading at the moment? That's the last question that I was asking. Yeah, I was curious what people are reading.
That's right. When Philip Roth died recently, someone gave me all these Philip Roth books. They're not his best, but I'm reading Indignation right now. And it's fine. I don't love it, but I just wanted to sort of refamiliarize myself with Philip Roth because it had been so many years since I read his work.
I think that's kind of great, right, to read a book. I'm reading a book like that, too. That's kind of exactly the same feeling. It's fine. It's not a book that I would normally plow through, but, you know, I think there's something to that, reading a book that that isn't a page-turner, but that is that allows you to get involved with who he is and the kind of writing and writer he was.
Right. Who is it?
What, who am I reading right now?
Yeah.
I'm reading Carl Jung's The Undiscovered Self.
Okay.
Which is kind of a dense book, and it's interesting, but, you know, it also makes me kind of, furrow my brow at a lot of things. There's some things that seem outdated. There's an enormous amount of assumptions and sweeping generalizations, but, you know, here's a pivotal thinker and saying really interesting things about, like, his relationship with Freud, who he said, you know, it was such an interesting anecdote in there where he says, you know, I didn't want to, he said Freud always thought that, you know, when I talked about my dreams, and he said he thought it was just him wishing that Carl Jung was wishing for Freud's early death. And he said that's how Freud interpreted his dream. And he said, so of course this is really personal and could be damaging to our relationship. So after that, I started lying to him about my dreams and interpretations. So Daniel, thanks so much for talking with me today. It's really been a pleasure hearing about your work and gallery.
Oh, yeah, thanks for having me.
You're listening to Yale Radio WYBC. This is Brainerd Carey with the lives of the artists, architects, curators, and more.